You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Kansas City Royals edition. I'm Anthony Kasterman. Pleased to be joined by Jeffrey Flanagan. Talk a little Royals baseball here. Jeffrey, as we record this, the Royals are coming off a nice series win over the Tigers. Things are looking up on that front. On the bad news, Jason Vargas hits the DL, which obviously impacts the rotation. But Chris Young, we talked about him last week, and he stepped up again when they needed him.
Well, he's just been phenomenal. And what a great signing that was back early in spring training by Dayton Moore and his staff. It's kind of hard to believe that Chris Young was sitting around without a contract all winter. And then, ironically, the day that the Royals signed him, Yu Darvish was going down to his surgery, and several other pitchers were going down. And I think a lot of other teams were kind of cursing the Royals at that moment, going, you know, God, how did they get him? They don't even need him, you know. But sure enough, as it turns out, they did need him, and he's been just a wonderful addition here as an emergency starter in two starts. And why not? I mean, he really had a terrific year last year, and just kind of wore down in September when he just because too many pitches, basically, because he threw really hard in spring last year. So I don't think anybody in the Royals organization is surprised he's been so good these two starts. And it shows you the depth that they have, that they can lose it like Vargas. And Chris Young just steps in and, you know, he's pitched two terrific outings. So, get a hat tip to the scouting department and to Dayton.
Yeah, absolutely. And this, you know, if you don't need a starter in Major League Baseball, just wait a few minutes.
Exactly. I mean, you just really have to have depth, because every team goes through this. You know, you're always going to lose guys. So, you know, they've got Joe Blanton down in the minors, too, and he's been pitching pretty well, and, you know, they could always, you know, turn to Brandon Finnegan, too, down the road. So, you know, they've got some capable bodies that they can fill in if somebody else goes down.
As far as the offense goes, Eric Hosmer, a guy that has had big things prescribed for him from the minute he was drafted, and just tore up the league when he first came up. And then just as far as a full season goes, he's yet to have that sustained, consistent season we'd really like to see from him. This season looks like it could be the one, and especially the way he's been the last couple weeks. He's got a slugging percentage over 700 the last 2 weeks, 36 total bases in his last 51 at-bats. What are you seeing from Haas?
He's just been, I think the light went off for him when he came back from his broken hand last year. He had a terrific September, a phenomenal October. Looked really sharp down in spring, and just had stepped into this season and has been the same guy. And you're right. I mean, we just don't know the ceiling on him. I mean, he could even be a 30 homer guy. I mean, he's got that kind of power. Some of the home runs he's hit in the last week just kind of leave you shaking your head at just the strength involved. You know, he's hitting the ball the opposite way at Kauffman Stadium into the fountains. I mean, you just don't see left-handers do that. And he's hit home runs over the center field wall at Kauffman, and those are just absolute bombs. He had two balls off of Kluber, I believe, that were the same distance, 417 feet to the opposite field. So that's just the kind of strength that he has. And he's shown more patience this year, I think. You know, his walks are up. He's being more pitch selective. That's helped him a lot. And he's just he's got confidence. He just feels like he can do this now. And it's kind of like everybody else on the offense right now. They all feel like they can do it. I think they're still leading the league in hitting, and they got to be up there in runs scored. This is a very confident group, and they're winning games even though they're losing bodies left and right. So it's a pretty impressive start to be 2011 at this point.
Absolutely. And one thing that stands out to me with Hosmer is the bat speed. I looked this up. His OPS on pitches 94 miles an hour or greater is 1.820, the second best in the majors this season. And
fastball hitter,
me,
huh?
in today's there's so much velocity in the game today, so that's such a separator to have that skill set in today's game.
Yeah, did you look up his exit velocity? That's got to be pretty high too, because when he's hitting balls, he hit a laser last week that I think it got out of the ballpark at about 2.2 seconds. I mean, and it just never got over 20 feet off the ground and still cleared the 400-foot sign. So, yeah, he's not really doing a whole lot different. He's made some mechanical changes to his lower body and getting more leverage that way. You know, he's not, you know, trying to swing harder. He's just trying to swing a little bit quicker through the zone and maybe shorten up the swing a little bit and use a little bit more of his leg strength. And he's got, you know, he's a tall guy and he's got long legs and he's got terrific leverage that way. And I've always felt that power starts from the ground up, and that's kind of what he's discovered too. And you know, I think he's got 5 home runs now, and he might just have one of those magical years where he finds himself and the sky's the limit. You know, he could be a 300 hitter, 350 on base, and, you know, hit 30 homers. Who knows? But they're certainly happy to have him.
Absolutely, and they're happy to have Mike Moustakas as a start as well. Had a family situation, was out over the weekend, but rejoined the team. And, boy, the start he's off to. We've talked before about how the shift has played into his head in the past, and it forced him to become a better hitter. And I'm impressed by he was never a high strikeout guy at the big league level. For all his struggles, you know, he wasn't a high strikeout guy. This year it's been absurd. He's only striking out less than 9% of his plate appearances. It was around 15% last year. So that's, it seems like that's another adjustment he's made, is selectivity.
Yeah, it is. And I really do think, too, that Ned was right. Putting him in the number two spot got himself involved in the game mentally, offensively, right away, rather than sitting on the bench. And say he goes 0-for-4 the day before, and then the game starts and he doesn't get up to the third inning, and he starts to think more and think more about being in a slump or something like that, where you're hitting up in the order like that, boom, the game starts, and you've got to commit right away offensively. And he doesn't have time to really think about bad at-bats. And he's just thinking about the next at-bat. And, you know, his numbers are really good, too, but he's really playing unselfishly. And I think that's the thing that impresses Ned and Dayton and everybody is he's giving himself up to move runners. He's bunting to beat the shift. You know, and we've all talked about, you know, how he's adjusted and starting to go the other way. I'm not sure the stat now, but I think over half of his hits have been the other way. He's really learning to stay back a little bit longer and just, you know, just shoot a single to the other way. And you're seeing more teams lately start to back off on the shift with him because they're just getting beat by it. I think the Indians backed off a little bit the last time they played them, and I expect to see that a little bit more in the future because eventually you just can't keep giving the other team bases. You just can't keep giving them base runners, and that's what the shift is doing. And I know the shift is up this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if more hitters try to go the Moose route, and in the end it makes them better all-around complete hitters. Yeah. Moose can still turn on the ball and pull a ball. You know, his natural strength is to pull a ball. He doesn't have the opposite field power that Haas does, but he can still pull a lot of home runs, and you're still going to see that. So, but now he knows in his mind that he can also go the other way and rip a gapper in the left center. So it might be a blessing in disguise. I've written that before, that he's had to adjust to beat the shift, and he's becoming a much, much more complete hitter.
Paulo Orlando seems to have coming back down to earth after that absurd April start he got off to, and just leads me to ask you for, I think we do this on a weekly basis, what's the latest on Alex Rios?
Oh, he's probably at least 2 or 3 weeks away. You know, it takes, you know, I talked to Nick Kenny, the trainer, a couple times this week in Detroit, and he, you know, he emphasized that the normal healing time for a hand fracture like that is 4 to 6 weeks, and we're right now in week 4. So you don't even really want to do any baseball-related activities till that bone is completely healed. And, you know, there's been they can tell that there has been healing. You know, they've done some MRIs and so forth, and there has been healing. So he'll be okay, but I think it's just going to be a little bit longer than they originally anticipated. I don't expect him to really start doing any baseball activities until the end of next week. You know, he'll probably he's tried to take a few – I wouldn't even call them dry swings. They're just kind of rollover swings where you just to see if the wrist is responding to a bat rollover, and it's been okay. But then you have the question of what do you do when he's actually ready. You're probably going to have to have him go rehab somewhere for at least 3 or 4 games just so he gets some at-bats against some real pitching. So you're talking late May, early June.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be a while. So trying to hold steady there in right field as best they can.
Yeah. And the league's kind of caught up to Paulo, unfortunately. As you knew, they would. Yeah. You know, they're not just feeding him fastballs down the middle anymore. They're making good pitches to him. And unfortunately, lately, Jarrod Dyson's kind of picked up his game a little bit too. So they're not getting a ton of production out of that right field platoon. But with Dyson, at least they have a lot of speed, and he's been hitting the ball pretty well lately.
Yeah. Kind of the opposite of what we were talking about earlier with Mike Moustakas and selectivity. Salvador Perez is 2 walks. He's always been a free swinger, but even by his standards, he's been swinging out the gate, and he's put up numbers, so you give him credit. But actually, I don't know why I was caught off guard by this, but I noticed it was his 25th birthday on Sunday, and he's one of the guys that feels older than 25. You know, he's been around a while now. He's played over 400 games at the big league level, and he's had such a huge impact on this club the last couple of years, all-star appearances the last 2 years, starter for the American League team last year. So just a general appreciation for Salvador Perez and what he's done in a very short time here.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's 25, but maybe in baseball years he's probably about 35 just because of the beating
exactly.
He's taken lately. But I'll tell you what, you know, you look at the 2 walks and you think, well, this is a selfish guy who swings at everything, but he had a great at-bat last night in Detroit in the 10th inning with Alex Gordon on second and nobody out. And he immediately gave himself up and hit a ground ball to the right side and got Gordon to third, which allowed Omar Sackfly to score what turned out to be the winning run. And that's what you're seeing a lot from these Royals. You know, early in the game and stuff, they're trying to probably get base hits and stuff like that and not really think about maybe moving runners. But when the game's on the line, what's made them a winning team is they're all pretty unselfish. They do things like that a lot more than they used to. And to see Sal do that last night, I really think brought a grin to everybody's face on the coaching staff. And he's capable of doing that. And I don't know if you're ever going to be able to convince him to, you know, see better pitches because he's a bad ball hitter too. I mean, he hits, hits balls that are an inch off the dirt. And we've seen that before in major leaguers. You just can't break that habit. You got a better chance maybe of throwing a fastball down the middle and getting it in by him than throwing a, you know, ball that's out of the zone because he just attacks everything. So, on Escobar, it's a lot the same way. The pitch that he hit for a home run on Saturday was really a pitch that Anibal Sanchez says was way out of the strike zone, and Escobar just tomahawked it out of the park. That's what they do. So you don't really want to change those habits if you're winning and they're being successful.
Yeah, and they, like you said, they know when to be unselfish, and that's no doubt. This is a team that's been to the mountaintop, gotten to the World Series, and learned the benefits of that mentality, and making the most of it here. A lot of confidence in that club. A lot of fun to watch, and always fun to talk to Jeffrey Flanagan about the Royals. I want to thank you all for listening. This has been MLB.com Extras, Kansas City Royals edition.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.